Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is August 31, 1980, and this is my audio letter number 57. On an August morning 35 years ago, the world we live in suddenly was changed forever. The day was August 6, 1945. It began shortly after dawn that summer morning in southwest Japan. Japanese defense forces detected a single American bomber approaching at high altitude. It was heading for the city of Hiroshima. Sirens began to wail, and Radio Hiroshima told residents to take cover. The American bomber, a B-29, was droning along 6 miles high, out of reach of Japanese fighters and flak. It flew directly over the city and on out of sight. A few minutes later, it reappeared, flying back over Hiroshima in the opposite direction. Then it was gone. As the all-clear signal sounded in Hiroshima, it seemed like just another false alarm, like other false alarms before it. There were many people in Hiroshima who believed that a real attack would never come to that city. There were all kinds of rumors that America would spare Hiroshima for one reason or another. Among other things, there was a large Christian community in Hiroshima. Even the mayor of Hiroshima was a Christian. There were those who were convinced that America was being merciful to Hiroshima for that reason. But less than an hour after the first all-clear signal on that sunny August morning, Radio Hiroshima started to broadcast another air raid alert. Three more American B-29s were passing over the city. But before the announcer could finish his words, he and 80,000 of his listeners ceased to exist. They were consumed by a man-made sun in the middle of the city, which boiled upward into a giant mushroom cloud. Afterward, the United States War Department called it a cosmic bomb, quote unquote. Outside the zone of total destruction, Hiroshima was transformed instantly into a nightmare beyond imagination. The streets were filled with pathetic victims, whom the Japanese referred to as the Walking Dead. These were people who had been scorched, irradiated, and dismembered beyond hope, but who would take hours, days, or weeks to die. Men, women, and children staggered around in agony without comprehension of what had happened to them. Many had sockets without eyes and bones without flesh in the aftermath of the unearthly heat wave from the bomb. Countless others have been poisoned by radiation from the blast or the fallout afterward. Within 3 months, 50,000 more people died in Hiroshima. 3 days later, it all happened again at Nagasaki. Like Hiroshima, Nagasaki had led a charmed life, free from American air attack. And as in Hiroshima, there were those in Nagasaki who had thought this was an act of mercy by the United States. Because Nagasaki was not only a Christian center, but the very place where Christianity had got its start in Japan. But all the illusions evaporated in nuclear fireball on August 9, 1945. Today, America is haunted by the 250,000 ghosts of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 35 years ago, our country became the first in history to use atomic warfare. And today, it is fast becoming our turn. Our satanic leaders are trying to make us forget the human hell of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Instead, they're trying to make nuclear war more thinkable to us. They want to close our eyes to the reality of nuclear war, because that is the only way in which they can trick us into accepting it. The legacy of America's war against Japan in World War II is also returning to haunt us in another way. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor was brought about deliberately in order to get America into the war. And now, the Bolsheviks here are turning all of America into a nuclear Pearl Harbor, and for the same purpose. Today, we are all on the front lines. In Audio Letter 55, I revealed the plan by which the Bolsheviks here intend to provoke a Russian nuclear attack. It involves a deliberate false alert and the use of our secretly deployed Minuteman TX mobile missile. If the Bolsheviks here succeed in carrying out the plan, the United States, as we now know it, will cease to exist. Pearl Harbor, USA will die in 1,000 Hiroshimas. But the satanic Bolsheviks here, who now control our government, will use our sacrifice for their own personal benefit. My friends, these are the things that lie ahead for us unless we, the people, take action to prevent it. Under our Constitution, this is both our right and our duty. My three special topics this month are topic number one, America's nuclear first strike plans in the news. Topic number two, Hurricane Allen and Russia's expanding weather warfare. And topic number three, step two in what you can do. Topic number one, 35 years ago this month, the age of nuclear warfare exploded into history at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was unleashed by the United States in a deliberate display of sheer mass destruction and stark terror. What America did to those two Japanese cities became the basis of America's entire doctrine of nuclear strategy. The basic concept was that America would never shoot first in a nuclear war. Instead, we would hold the specter of Hiroshima and Nagasaki over the head of any would-be attacker. America's nuclear arsenal was aimed at Russian cities. Any Russian attack on the United States would have caused cities all across Russia to vanish quickly in nuclear fireballs. Knowing that, supposedly the Russians would never attack us. But early this month, on August 5, a drastic change in America's nuclear war strategy was made public. For the very first time ever, the United States is officially adopting what is called a counterforce nuclear strategy. It has been made official by a document called Presidential Directive 59. The directive states that America's prime nuclear targets would no longer be Russian cities. Instead, the prime targets would now be Russia's military forces and political leadership. This change in America's nuclear doctrine is so radical that it is provoking widespread controversy, especially overseas. Spokesmen here are trying to give it a sugar coating so that we, the people, will swallow it easily. The official excuse for the new strategy is that it is intended to limit and deter nuclear war. And yet, the same directive demands preparations to fight a prolonged nuclear war, not just hours, but weeks or months. So, what does all this really mean? My friends, to see the answer, you don't have to be a military expert. All you have to do is to use plain old common sense. For example, listen to some words from a letter to the editor published in the New York Times just a few days ago on August 24. Referring to the new American plan to attack Russian military installation, the writer says, quote, "Does that mean that while they destroy us in the cities, our commanders in their shelters would then destroy their military installations? Unless this is a charade to substantiate the production of more missiles, it must mean that the United States is preparing to start a nuclear war with a first strike," unquote. It is signed Kenneth Boss, Brooklyn. Those few words of simple logic contain more truth than you will ever hear in the official excuses from Washington. Over 2 years ago, in Audio Letter 36 for July 1978, I first revealed America's secret shift to a first strike strategy. At the time, not many people would believe me. But now we are drawing closer and closer to nuclear war itself, day by day. And as we do so, the first strike strategy of the United States is coming to the surface. Last February 21, 1980, there was a statement of Defense Department spokesman Thomas Ross. He shocked reporters by saying that America might shoot first, quote unquote, in a nuclear war. And now there is Presidential Directive 59. By proclaiming America's shift to a counterforce strategy, it further confirms the secret intentions to launch a nuclear first strike at Russia. And my friends, there is more. the drastic changes in America's military posture during the past few years have coincided with a hidden change in leadership of our country. The satanic Bolsheviks, who have been overthrown and expelled from Russia, have seized control of America's government. Now they are dragging us down the road toward a war which will be nuclear suicide for you and me. But as I explained last month in Audio Letter 56, our Bolshevik rulers do not expect to suffer and die like the rest of us. Instead, they plan to take full advantage of their first strike plan for their own benefit. Last month I said, quote, "Because they will know when war is about to start, they will be able to protect themselves. They plan to use their positions of governmental power to hide in government war bunkers throughout the United States." Unquote. Less than 2 weeks after I recorded those words in Audio Letter 56, Presidential Directive 58 was leaked to the press on August 11. In the words of the New York Times the following day, quote, "President Carter has ordered more effective procedures for protecting civilian and military leaders in event of nuclear war, including plans for the rapid evacuation of key government personnel from Washington to airborne and underground command posts." Unquote. My friends, the directive is concerned with maintaining what is called the continuity of government, their government only. You and I and our children are left to fend for ourselves. Last month I explained that the Bolsheviks here are possessed by only one all-consuming goal. That goal is to mount a nuclear offense against Russia that will set off Nuclear War I. They don't care how badly the United States is beaten, so long as they can wound Russia with at least 20 million dead. With that attitude, matters of a defensive nature are of no interest to the Bolsheviks here. Likewise, tactical weapons, which cannot be used to attack Russia, are being given very little attention. A creeping paralysis is slowly crippling America's armed forces, and our secret Bolshevik rulers could not care less. Examples of this are all around us. For example, consider the plight of the Air Force's premier fighter group at Langley Air Force Base, Virginia. It's the first tactical fighter wing with a tradition of leadership that stretches back to the First World War. They fly America's hottest new Air Force fighter, the F-15, and their motto is, "Readiness is our profession." But earlier this summer, on June 7, the 1st Tactical Fighter Wing failed an Air Force readiness test. Of the 66 F-15s on hand, barely one-third were in condition to be put to use for missions. There simply are not enough spare parts or skilled maintenance personnel to go around. And elsewhere, the picture is no brighter. For example, we often hear about America's supposed increased commitment to NATO. The readiness of the United States Air Force in Europe mirrors the situation I just mentioned at Langley. Funding to pay for flight operations and maintenance has been reduced, not increased. Instead, the Bolsheviks here are siphoning off every dollar to focus on secret preparations in their first strike plan. Meanwhile, Air Force units in Europe are hampered by inadequate spare parts, fewer flight operations, and declining proficiency of pilots as a result. The story is much the same among the other services. There has been heavy publicity over the past year or two about the problems of the Army, including the lack of spare parts and skilled maintenance. But the Navy is also in the same fix, especially in certain areas of naval aviation. The declining readiness of our non-strategic forces is a direct result of our Bolshevik rulers' preoccupation with nuclear war preparations. Another sign of this is the never-ending rash of brush fires around Russia's perimeter. In Audio Letter 53 last January, I described how Russia's intervention in Afghanistan was triggered by extensive CIA activity in that country, and to this day, large amounts of aid are being funneled to the rebels in Afghanistan by the CIA by way of Pakistan and China. As a result, Russia's involvement there has been extended far longer than intended, distracting Russia's leaders and siphoning off resources. In Southeast Asia, the United States is pouring arms into Thailand, which is stiffening its stance against Russia's client state, Vietnam. Red China is receiving secret shipments of nuclear weapons from America. And just this month, Russia's western flank has been shaken by the crisis over major strikes in Poland. As of now, the Polish regime seems to have succeeded in defusing the bomb of possible revolution to the surprise of CIA-supported labor unions. They were hoping to provoke Russian intervention, making Poland a second Afghanistan. But Russia's new rulers have outmaneuvered the old Bolsheviks here. These are some of the many threads which the Bolsheviks are trying to use to tie down the Russian bear. They want to keep the Kremlin off balance and preoccupied while they prepare to set off nuclear war one. In Audio Letter 55, I described a major program in the latest Bolshevik plans for an American nuclear first strike, the Minuteman TX missile. The Minuteman TX, also known as the Traveling Minuteman, is America's real mobile ICBM. Behind the smokescreen of controversy over the so-called MX mobile missile, Minuteman TX missiles are already being deployed. The Bolsheviks here intend to use them in connection with an elaborate false nuclear alert to set off nuclear war one. And they are in a hurry. They can't wait 10 years to build all those so-called MX launching bases out west. Instead, as I detail in Audio Letter 55, the Minuteman TX system is being assembled fast. It borrows heavily from existing hardware of all kinds and is being deployed along existing railroad tracks in our northern states. Barely 2 weeks after I gave the details in Audio Letter 55, you may have noticed other hints about it in the news. During NBC Nightly News on television for July 14, 1980, there was a brief segment in which retired General John Singlob made some remarks. He took issue with the MX missile scheme, which we keep hearing about. Instead, he said that the United States could regain superiority over Russia quickly within 2 or 3 years. And what he proposed in place of the MX was what he termed a quick-fix mobile ICBM, which would not need the elaborate MX bases out west. General Singlob's words that evening would have fit the Minuteman TX, except for one thing. The TX is not 2 or 3 years away. It is being deployed right now. The Bolshevik maneuvers to throw America into nuclear war are complex and constantly changing, and yet there is one ingredient that continues to figure in every plan. That ingredient is Iran. I first made public the crucial importance of Iran for an American first strike at Russia 2 years ago this month in Audio Letter 37. The particular strategy of attack which I outlined in that tape has already been attempted this past January 1980, and it ended in failure. But Iran continues to offer very tempting geographic advantages for any attack against Russia. And so, one way or another, Iran has so far been included in every Bolshevik first strike plan against Russia that has been devised. The Bolsheviks here know very well that they are working against tremendous odds militarily. For nearly 3 years, since late 1977, Russia has been in complete control of the military uses of space. And Russia's cosmo-strategic umbrella is designed to make nuclear war difficult to start and impossible to win for any enemy. But our Bolshevik leaders here are determined to have their nuclear war, one way or another. And because their plan is a suicide plan for the United States as a whole, they don't care very much how they do it. So they are embarked on a series of plans, one after another, to set off a nuclear first strike against Russia. They intend to just keep it up until something works. But the Russians are just as determined to thwart each war plan as it is attempted, because in this way, they are gradually pulling the fangs of the Bolshevik dragon. Even so, the Kremlin leaders are convinced that at some point the Bolsheviks will succeed in setting off nuclear war. Our rulers here have been operating on roughly a 3-month cycle in their first strike planning. That is, every 3 months or so, they set a new plan in motion. Each plan is different from the one before, but they all have the same final objective. That objective is an American nuclear first strike followed by all-out war with Russia. The first attempt at an American first strike took place late last January 1980, as I reported in audio letters 53 and 54. That attempt was based on an updated version of the plan, which I made public 2 years ago in audio letter 37. There was no public hint about what was afoot, other than a rapid buildup of nuclear war talk in the news. Russia succeeded in totally shattering the attack, inflicting severe losses on the United States in the process. And here in the United States, the nuclear war talk suddenly went away. Next came the so-called hostage rescue mission into Iran in late April. I discussed that in audio letter 55, so we'll not repeat it here. It was another total defeat for the United States, and that time it could not be hidden completely. The third Bolshevik war plan was to begin with a supposed coup and assassination attempt on Ayatollah Khomeini in late July last month. The real Ayatollah Khomeini was already assassinated long ago, last February 1980, as I reported in audio letter 54. But that didn't matter for the purposes of the Bolshevik war plan. Part of the plan called for intense fighting at the United States Embassy in Tehran, supposedly in a new hostage rescue attempt. But the game plan called for that to fail in a way that would have aroused American passions and set the stage for military action. In the July plan, Russian intelligence agents were able to stop it before it even started. On July 7, Russia sent a warning to certain members of the Iranian government about the plan for a coup. 3 days later, on July 10, Iranian authorities announced that they had foiled a major coup attempt. For several weeks thereafter, the aftermath of the attempted coup was a story that grew larger and larger in Iran. Before it ran its course, over 600 people were implicated, including several high military officers. All kinds of details were published and broadcast about alleged financing and control from the United States, and some of the plans involving our hostages were exposed. United States Bolshevik agents on the scene wanted to make sure that all of this made no impression on us here in the United States, and so they arranged a diversionary action. On July 10, the first announcement was made in Iran about the halted plot for a coup. But most Americans paid far more attention to another announcement, which was made only a few hours later. We were told that one of the hostages, Richard Queen, was about to be released. We were told that this was a humanitarian gesture due to his illness. But that was not the reason for the timing of Queen's release. He had been ill for some time. The exact timing of his surprise release was a CIA ploy. It was solely to draw our attention away from the other major developments going on inside Iran. The fourth Bolshevik war plan was scheduled for this October 1980, but that plan too may have been ruined before it could start. 2 weeks ago, columnist Jack Anderson tried to publish a series of articles about the October plan. The White House reacted with the usual angry denials, and many major newspapers refused to carry the columns he had written about it. In effect, he was censored by our Bolshevik government. But, my friends, Jack Anderson was basically right in what he wrote. Plans are being laid for an American invasion of Iran, beginning on a limited scale. Jack Anderson's only major mistake is his speculation that politics lies behind the attack plan. The real motivation is much bigger than that. Not politics, but nuclear war. Through every avenue possible, our leaders here are drumming up American support for their war preparations. To do that, they are tapping our pride and can-do spirit by raising false hopes about our military power. And a perfect example of this is the publicity which began suddenly about 10 days ago concerning our so-called stealth plane. We're told that it's a new type airplane that is virtually invisible to Russian radar, and so it would be able to sneak undetected into Russia in order to attack targets there. The government announcement on August 20 about our so-called stealth craft has led to confused reactions by many people. On one hand, people are encouraged to hear that we have such a remarkable secret weapon to defend ourselves against Russia. But at the same time, many people are wondering, if it's so secret, why is the government suddenly talking about it? My friends, the government is releasing information about the stealth craft because they know it no longer matters. They found out early this year that it is of no use against Russia. The public statements about the stealth craft have mentioned the fact that it has an unusual shape with rounded surfaces that can help evade radar. But they have not mentioned that the unusual shape has another purpose. That purpose is to enable the craft to perform properly when it is traveling underwater instead of in the air. The stealth craft, my friends, is also known by another name. It is a submersible aircraft, also known as a subcraft. The government has just announced that it has been tested secretly for the past 2 years. But I made it public 2 years ago this month in Audio Letter 37 because I believe you had a right to know. In Audio Letter 37, I described how subcraft were to be used in America's first strike against Russia, triggering nuclear war. And last January 1980, in Audio Letter 53, I described what happened when our leaders here tried to carry out that plan. The subcraft can evade radar, infrared detection, and other conventional means of sensing. But they are sitting ducks for Russia's master secret weapon, which I revealed long ago in Audio Letter 42. That weapon is psychoenergetic range finding, or PRF, which cannot be evaded or jammed by any known technique. Last January, the squadrons of American subcraft with Israeli pilots, which tried to attack Russia, were tracked by PRF. Russian Cosmospheres, armed with charged particle beam weapons, positioned themselves overhead. And when the order came for the Cosmospheres to begin firing, the subcraft all disappeared in blinding columns of fire and steam. And so the Bolsheviks here know better than to try to use subcraft, or stealth craft if you prefer, against Russia again. They are useless. As a result, they now have only one real value left, and that is propaganda value against you and me. They want us to believe the lie that we are militarily superior to Russia. They are determined to drag us all over the cliff of nuclear suicide. My friends, we are all on the front lines of Nuclear War I.